Good morning. Today is Wednesday, August 17th, 228th day of the new year. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor, still hanging in there, Mark Lovelace.
How are you?
You realize you only got about five of these shows left.
Oh, geez.
Oh, you did realize that there was only five of these shows left. Okay.
I better come up with something interesting to say after 7 years.
We'll try. Step at a time, babe. Step at a time. Our quote this morning is a Will Rogers quote. Everything is funny as long as it's happening to somebody else. Isn't that par for the course, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So you've been following the Olympics at all? Are you an Olympic guy?
Not really. Not particularly. I mean, yes, you can't not follow it. You know, you see information about it, but I haven't been watching it at night or, you know, turning it on or anything like that.
It's so intriguing for me. I'm not particularly one way or the other. I enjoy individuals. Mm-hmm. And seeing the individuals as they're doing stuff is kind of cool, because some of them, you know some of the stories of the challenges they had, mm-hmm, before they got to the competition, let alone at the competition. Yeah, but it's the same for me with professional sports, too. Mm-hmm. You tend to follow players rather than teams. For you, it's probably like politicians. You don't follow parties, you follow individuals. Okay, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's always interesting for me to understand the backside of things.
Yeah.
Where did somebody come from? Why do they have that attitude? Where's that perspective from? Oh, okay, ding and ding and ding and ding. And I think I must not be in a minority position, because, as you know, a lot of folks get frustrated with supervisors who become state officials because they don't seem to be a supervisor anymore. They become something else, or somebody who started at the city council level, at the state level. Something changes as they go through. Do you find
when they go over to the dark side?
Well, no, not just it's like they change. Something is different. Now, whether it's the ability or realization or experience or whatever, but, oh, well, he came from city government, so he's going to remember cities. And you get, mm-hmm, to the state, and all of a sudden, yeah, I think cities are things you drive through at high speed to get to the county. I think sometimes it just, people change and knowing their stories.
And I know with CSAC, the State Association of Counties, every time someone has gone from being a county supervisor to the assembly or the state senate, it's like, all right, we got one of our people in there. And then there's always this implied, don't forget us.
Yeah.
Don't forget where you came from.
Yeah. And it's like putting a sticker on the guy's back or the gal's back as they're leaving. Don't kick me.
Well, you know, there's this, even folks that, you know, do that with the solid intent that they want to continue, they want to get into the legislature so they can represent local governments and do the right thing by local governments. I'm sure you've heard the concept of capture, you know, regulatory capture or, you know, political capture, where, you know, when you work with, you know, you're working with the person on the other side of something, or, you know, that in dealing with the opposition, in any case, you end up coming closer to them and understanding them, which is a great thing. You know, you understand, you know, the range of opinions and why people on the other side hold their issues. But you run the risk of ultimately getting captured by the other side.
Sucked in is the phrase I use.
Yeah.
Captured. Captured kind of sounds like a game of flag. But yeah, you're right. Things change. Sometimes they change for just naturally, and sometimes it seems like things are kind of pushed a little bit. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. Time's flying by this morning. We're back to Talk Shop with Mark Lovelace. Mark, in considering some of the different challenges that are out there. You worked with some folks before you weren't elected. You've worked with some as an elected, as they were staff, as they have become elected. Do you see change in people's perspectives as either they go up the ladder, or is it just kind of wrapping? You know, they appear a little bit more sophisticated, but they really are the same people, and they're consistent all the way through.
People that I work with in government?
You mentioned the CSAC folks. I'm sure there were some folks you knew before you were part of the supervisors. Do you sense that things do change? I forget even whose quote it is. You know, the power corrupts, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do you see that changes, that people get caught up in themselves or their titles,
I would,
are they true to themselves?
I would really turn that around, you know, the power corrupts piece. Well, certainly that's there. We see that, but I don't think that's necessarily, you know, a function of government. I think, you know, clearly can see with, you know, Donald Trump, the power of, you know, being a powerful individual corrupts. And, you know, so I don't think there's anything about that it has to be government power that
notice I'm not
people.
Rising for that one, guys.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And the folks on the radio can't see you, like, drawing the knife here.
Yeah.
So. But what I was going to say on that is that I think that when you see a shift, people coming from the outside often don't have a fundamental understanding of the reason that government isn't advancing just a single agenda. You know, I'll go to the other argument. Look at Bernie Sanders supporters that think Hillary, you know, was a sellout because she's not nearly progressive enough. There's a reason that she becomes the mainstream candidate for the general election. It's because anytime you have the extremes winning, and it's kind of a difficult function of the primary system, is when you pander to the extremes, you now have someone who's running to, you know, be the leader of the entire United States, who represents less than a majority. You know, they represent maybe a, you know, majority of one side, but their ability to reach across and get some of that middle ground is very difficult. And so it's important for people to understand that when you're leading any body of people, whether it's as a county supervisor or a state legislator, you know, a member of Congress, or, you know, the president, that you need to represent all the people, not just your base, not just the people that agree with you going in.
I think a lot of folks grasp that. What I'm thinking of, and I can, okay, you're going to use Trump, I'll use Clinton, or we can use Nixon, scandals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if someone is ripe for not presenting the whole truth at the city council level, you don't think that they're going to become all of a sudden someone who tells the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth for the rest of their life as they're going up the political ladder.
Yeah, again,
you don't think that people would change, but now maybe the investigative process changes, maybe the perspectives change, but okay, I'm changing my point of view because I sat down with Mark Lovelace, and he told me about bum-ba-bum-ba-bum. I've done some research, and by golly, he's right. I now adjust my position.
Became better informed.
Now, that's
understood nuance, understood that there's a range of opinion on things.
Easy. I'm not going to give you too much credit on this one. But, okay, so things change.
Yeah.
The more information you have, you might change perspective. I mean, I think that's a normal thing, but you're up front and you don't hide it. Versus the covert nature that some of this stuff happens to be, and you go, well, what happened? I mean, he was a yellow, and now he's a purple. What happened? And you go, I'm trying to stay away from colors that count. What happened? He changed. Somebody got to him. Well, maybe it was just education changed, but the core value set is still in place. And I guess that's the thing that is most frightening for me, is that someone's core values change as they go up the ladder, as they have power, as they have influence, as they have something now they didn't have before. All of a sudden the person changes, not the perspective. The individual actually does start to change.
Well, it can, or the person can understand how best to advance their values. Maybe the person comes in and they have a clear agenda, clear idea of what they think is the overall direction that the county or the nation, you know, needs to move in. And they, you know, when they're on the outside, they think the way to do that is to, you know, pound my fist on the table and
pull a Khrushchev.
Yeah, you know, or yeah. Yeah, and just, you know, pound the podium and, you know, call anyone on the other side, you know, corrupt and names and criminals and whatever. Once you get in, you understand that you actually have to work with those people that you don't agree with if you want to move things forward. And just like, you know, that first conversation about, you know, regulatory capture or political capture, there is actually a reason why that's a good thing to understand that the other side has valid opinions. You know, everyone out there, when people are motivated by their values, you can't change people's values. You don't go to someone and, you know, just randomly explain to someone why their entire worldview is wrong and have them go, oh, thank you for that correction. Yeah. It doesn't work that way.
Now, normally it's associated with fingers and wall sockets.
Something like that, you know. So yeah, you need to understand everyone's values in their mind, everyone's, you know, value-based opinion, their life experiences that have led to it all that is completely valid to them. And you can't invalidate everything that a person believes. So what you have to do is recognize, you know, that's people, you know, their values are not going to change. You have to be able to work with that. And so if you want to build enough support for something that may not align with those values, you have to do it gently. You have to find, you know, maybe, you know, my goal is way over here to the left, you know, but I need to recognize that I'm not going to get that. But if I can move things just slightly, that's progress, you know, for me. Someone on the right would say, if I can move it a little bit to the right instead of way over here to the end, that's progress. It's moving the ball.
Not getting run over by it.
Yeah.
KINS,
not
news and
sacked.
Information. Exactly. It's 8:30. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mark Lovelace from the County Office of Supervisors or something like that.
Something, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll answer to anything.
Whatever, yeah. Talk Shop, even this one, it's scintillating as it's been. It's presented by Redek and CDH Painting. Mark, the stuff around the marijuana that is happening, we got Proposition 64. It's in. People are starting to read it, starting to comment on it. Okay, that's interesting. Now we're starting to kind of actually argue about what is rather than what might be. Fair enough. I mean, that's kind of healthy. When you and the other supervisors were looking at the permit fees, what percent compliance are you anticipating? I mean, is it going to be a? Do you think it's going to be a 20-year process? Like the 215 is before everything is really clearly vetted and everybody's on board and it's not some are and some aren't and the enforcement branch and the, you know, big muscle and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, there's a range of opinions on it, obviously. Myself, I'd be surprised if we haven't seen fundamental change in terms of compliance within 5 years. And the reason I say that is that, you know, we're in a gray area still. We've got laws that were passed at the state level to create a regulatory framework, but those regulations aren't in place yet. The agencies that will enforce those regulations aren't staffed up. The mechanisms.
Now, is that part of the proposition?
No, I'm saying for medical marijuana. The passing the law doesn't mean things change overnight. It takes a while to bring everything in. And so people are still able to kind of surf in this gray area here. But that window of opportunity is rapidly closing. And the idea, you know, in the past, it's been that that law enforcement had to be able to demonstrate beyond the shadow of a doubt that a person was diverting product into the black market, or that there were other things that were illegal about the grow.
Not just nailing water.
Yeah, you know, there were all those kinds of things that, you know, the burden of proof basically was on law enforcement. When you have a regulatory process, what we're already seeing is law enforcement just has to go to the file and see, is this registered? They're being generous. People, they know that the regulatory process itself takes time, but people who have registered their grows and are in, you know, making a good faith effort to bring them in to, you know, get permitted, they're not going after those folks. They're saying, look, here's someone that's, you know, they're in the permit process, and that's a good thing. And so there's plenty of fish to fry out there to go after the ones who have no intent whatsoever. And what's going to happen very quickly once the state regulations are fully up and running, for any product to be sold legally in California, it will have to have been grown in conformance with local regulations, meaning it has to be permitted at the local level. And so if you turn that around, anything that wasn't permitted at the local level cannot begin to claim that it's medical marijuana, because it is, you know, once you can't sell it legally to the end user in that way, to any dispensary, it is as black market as if it was grown in a trespass grow in a national forest. It is absolutely 100% criminal. And so very shortly, we'll get to a point where you are either 100% legal or 100% criminal. And there's going to be no gray area left. We're still in the, you know, swimming in that.
You're saying with the permitting process.
Yeah, when the permitting process at the state level, to where it can be tracked fully to the end, you know, to the final retailer and stuff. And again, right now that's a little gray.
Is dairy that way?
Excuse me?
Dairy?
I don't.
The whole farm to table.
Yeah, well, there certainly are laws about, you know, with
dairy, you know, you go Mark and Brian Cow Inc. I know, truly frightening cross. You know, my cows have spots, yours are all brown. Okay, so there's still a clear line there. But we,
you got red cows, I got blue.
Yeah,
cows.
Yeah. So we sell to the creamery, the milk. They come by, they pick it up, and goes. Now we don't have to license each cow. We don't have to license each farm. It's not. It's tracked, sort of, but it's not to the granular level.
If you were running a dairy and you're selling product to, you know, distributors or to stores, and you know, the ag commissioner or, you know, environmental health or whoever comes by and says, "Hey, you're not licensed to be able to, you know, to produce dairy as a food product. You know, nothing here has been inspected or whatever." You know, the lack of a permit, they can shut you down for that. But in this case, you know, dairy itself, cows, it's not illegal to have cows. It's not illegal to, you know, produce milk for your own consumption or whatever. But with cannabis, if you're doing it commercially, and you don't have a permit, it is not just that you're unpermitted. It puts you in the criminal end, because the only place you can be selling that is in the black market.
So if you're a commercial right now, if you're a medicinal co-op, you're commercial.
Yeah.
If you're an individual,
if you're growing for your own personal use,
doesn't matter.
And yeah, that's
at
one
this
thing.
Point.
But there's limits to that, and the county, you know, the county's the permits for personal use are only up to, I think, in the largest case, I think it's only 200 square feet. I'd have to double check on that. So, you know, that's how much you can. Well, it's more than a couple, but
you have skinny plants. I have big white plants.
Yeah, well, yeah, it depends on the size, I guess.
Red and blue, baby.
A couple of trees. But
so when this, if the proposition does pass, does that run then parallel to what the medicinal folks have got, or is it something completely different, and now you're going to have two different approaches to dealing with the same product?
Unfortunately, they missed a huge opportunity to make it a true parallel, to put it in there. You know, the what I'd been arguing for years when I was talking to folks, you know, who are working on legalization or the concept of it, was that you know, we'd have the wrong discussion or the wrong narrative for years, which was we need to legalize it and regulate it, legalize it and regulate it. And it took me a while to realize that no. We need to regulate it and then legalize it. Because once it's regulated, then the only question you need to put to the voters is, should we legalize it for recreational use and regulate it consistent with, you know, medical marijuana? Instead, what they've done is they ask the values-based question of, do you want to legalize it for recreational use, which I think most Californians are, you know, are supportive of. But then they attach this, 64-page regulatory legislative approach that people aren't going to read, and that, you know, realistically, most people are not going to have enough experience with regulatory processes and legislation or whatever to be able to determine, you know, the value of those details. There's not that public process to vet them that we have in other ways.
It's more of a poundage issue.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, the initiative process is a great gauge of the public's values. It's a terrible way to create legislation or regulation. The flip side is, of course, that the legislative process is a very good way to create, you know, regulations, because it's very deliberative, but maybe not the best barometer of the people's values.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace. Three to one. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Mark Lovelace. Mark, I know a lot of folks are looking at it as kind of a fait accompli that 64 is going to pass in the fall and that we're going to have some kind of consistency. To what if it doesn't? What if medicinal marijuana is the only legal marijuana in the state of California? Does that upset the apple cart significantly on what the medicinal folks are now doing to get to that point, to these folks who have taken out all these permits and are lining up to pay all these fees? Because I would think you take out a permit saying you intend to, probably a pretty good indication you are. Thank you very much for your name, address, serial number, and contact information. We'll be in touch.
Well, the legalizing for recreational use still won't change the state-federal relationship. It'll be no different in that case. If you're growing under, you know, medical, you know.
I was thinking more for the sheriffs, the county sheriffs in each of the.
Yeah. Well, the anyone that is, anyone that's cultivating under the current, you know, Medical Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act or MRSA or the county's ordinance or both, as they have to be, has to also, you know, can only be distributing their product to legitimate dispensaries that have to, you know, demonstrate that they're only selling product to people with, you know, doctor's recommendations.
The appropriate distribution channels.
And so it really becomes more of a matter of limiting it on that way. If someone's cultivating now without any of those relationships with distributors, I'm not sure, frankly, on the details of whether they can't actually cultivate or whether they just end up in a situation where they're going to have a failed business because they can't move their product. If they're thinking, oh, I don't need those relationships with dispensaries because I'm just going to, you know, sell it through stores when it's fully legalized, they may find themselves.
Or on the corner as they do now, or however they distribute the stuff.
Yeah.
It's intriguing seeing this whole thing kind of evolve and create around us.
Mm-hmm.
The what ifs.
Yeah. Well, back to the core question of what happens, though, if the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, Prop 64, fails. I don't think that we have to wait another 4 years for the next presidential race, which is generally when you want to do something big values, you know, loaded kind of issue like this, because the legislature can do this themselves. You know, the legislature
is there.
And I think that the
right environment for that now.
I think that, you know, we can get there. I don't know that it would happen, you know, next year necessarily. But I think that, you know, the legislature, MRSA itself actually has a provision for being the basis for recreational use, should it be changed.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks
hey, we threw
me.
More fog on the whole discussion. Thank you very much. See everybody tomorrow.